We all know that on any given day, only 5% of the people who go to a track win. Is that all acceptable to you? Anybody deny that? Anybody think it's more than that? I can't tell anymore when I read the statistics. There was an article by a client of ours, Sal Sinatra. I tried to get Frank, but I ended up with Sal, who's a pretty honest man because he has his own systems that he sells, but he uses our logic for money management and probably our method in the closet while he's selling his own, which is a very good way to do it. The break that down now, and you have, I used to say 1%. Well, I have a client who's also in the closet who works for the IRS in Washington. I used to call them executives, but they call them, what do they call them now? Officials. They call them officials. And he told me that they have 2% now are winning. 1% wins with these huge syndicates that don't handicap, but they buy the race, so to speak, with pick sixes, pick threes, huge exactas, what do you call it? It's a totally different bag than what we're doing. But they win. They are the other half now who wins since they've evolved the pick six and other type exotics throughout the nation. They do win. But they're no problem to the IRS, he tells me, because they have to sign these tickets when they win. The problem to the IRS is guys like us. This is how he happened to tell me about it. He said, your people ought to show that they made something if they're winning. He says, we're 1% and those like us who grind it out race by race. So 1% of the people are winning legitimately as handicappers. So we have to find how many different people go to the track and all that sort of thing. But you could say there are 5 million, and 1% of 5 million isn't very much. 2% isn't very much. But you're in the minority if you're a winner and a consistent winner. One little win doesn't count. You know, these big wins, they don't worry about those. Vegas doesn't worry about the big wins. They'll put you up in a suite and buy you girls and boys or whatever you want. Plus, incidentally, Kansas and Missouri are second less AIDS plague states in the United States. Maine's the only one better. So you're living in very safe territory here. So you go home.
You mean I can go out tonight?
Yeah. And this track here has the fourth largest mutual payoffs. So fourth largest payoff and the second smallest AIDS. That's a heck of a combination, folks. Just a little tidbit. You don't get these kind of statistics from other handicapping authorities. So if you're winning at all, that 20% of the people break even. Now, I'm involved in a profession which I belong to these organizations for compulsive gamblers. Now, they're always worrying about the terrible tragedy invoked on this country by compulsive gamblers, by pathological gamblers, with the destruction of their families and themselves. It's terrible, and it's growing worse every year, despite their lack of efforts. So if everybody broke even, there would be no gambling problem in this country. Everybody have fun. They'd break even. They wouldn't lose or win. And it would be a happy world. I'll give you an example. The little old lady from St. Louis, a widow, and this is the largest case, but there are dozens of cases in our files. But she's a Catholic, and what you light candles for people. What else do you do for them? You put them in a roster, and they say your name at some mass? I get my name set at masses and candles lit for me all over the country. And here's the rationale. Bless you, Dr. Sarton. We lit a candle for you because we have $30,000 in fixed income every year. We get it on January 5th. We take the $30,000. We go all around the country to racetracks. And we keep out $5,000 for when we come home at Christmas. We spend it on the kids, which our kids are like 40, 50, and grandkids, great-grandkids probably. And then we get the check on January 5th, and we go spend the $25,000. Last year, Dr. Sarton, thanks to you, we only lost $15,000. That means we made $10,000. We hardly know what to do with it. And so we're lighting a candle for you. Hey, It's all in the mind. If you lose $15,000 less than you expect to lose, you're winning it. And I got a lot of people like that. They bless us for making them lose less. And breaking even to some people is nirvana. My God, I can go to the track year in and year out, never lose any money. See, people focus on how much they're going to lose, don't they? Don't you all figure? Let's see. Before you met us, of course. Let's see, I got so much money, $50. I'll just spend $50 at the track today. And I won't lose any more than $50, I promise me. And they got discipline. When they lose the 50, they go home. And then they rationalize away. Say, well, listen, if I take my wife to dinner or something, I lost the same 50. Of course, they didn't take their wives to dinner and they get divorced and things like that happen. But still, they only lost the 50 they set out for. How many of you were once at one time in your life guilty of that? How many of you weren't? How many of you are lying? Not one person in this room ever said, well, I'll just take $100 or I'll just take $20. Everybody's done it. I did that in the beginning. Well, I won't lose more than 20 today. Thinking in terms of how much you're going to lose or how little you're going to lose. Concentrating and focusing on losing. Now, be honest this time. Let's go back 5 years. How many of you were going to races 5 years ago? Well, virtually all of you. So we didn't get any cherries here. And you said to yourself, well, boy, if I can just, you know, I need to break even today because the rent's due. That sort of thing. But you expected to lose. It was no big blow to lose, was it? Because that's what you expected. When you won, what happened? You get this tremendous emotional up. Oh, God, I won! Isn't that wonderful? And you're elated and your emotions are just overflowing. Now some guy comes along and tells you you're supposed to win. And now you go out there with the expectation of winning. And as long as you're winning, you're just like you were when you're losing before. Everything's just fine. Now you lose a race. The same tragic upheaval emotionally occurs when you lose as used to occur when you win. Is that not true? Anybody know that? A win used to excite you. Now a loss excites you. You put you under a polygraph and the same reactions will occur. Your heartbeat, your blood pressure, your galvanic responses will all be the same now when you lose as they were when you win as they were when you lost, or vice versa. Anyway, I want to make it. Any questions on that? Anybody disagree with that? We got to have a little hostility here. Don't save your hostility when you go to the room tonight and say, ah, full of crap. You got to speak now or forever hold your peace, because I'm a very naive guy. I believe you, everything you tell me. I really do. I have to. As long as the reports are good. And they are very good, incidentally. Most of your energy reports are outstanding. That's the way we have to keep in touch with you. And I think the energy reports, just as much as the program itself, have helped you. Because having to answer to somebody what you did, having to write it down, what you never did before, is the, as Dick Spibble will say later on, is the key to success. Most people don't want to write down what they did because they don't want to face the loss. They can remember their wins. Boy, I remember that, but they don't remember all those little attempts they made before they got the wins. We have to put down each race as it occurs. And as you see you're not doing well, you will subconsciously try to overcome it when you see it on paper. It's just natural. Now look, let's take a guy who gets up and talks. He's not very conscious of what he's saying. He doesn't know that he's blubbering, not making sense, or speaking in very, very incorrect English or whatever language he speaks. He won't be conscious of that. If he dazzles the audience, he doesn't give a damn how he did it. If he bores the audience, he's got a built-in thing where he doesn't know he's boring. That's what I've got. But if you have to write it, put it into text, and you see all those little mistakes in English and all those stoppings and starting up again somewhere else and not making sense, boy, you correct your writing immediately, don't you? How many of you turn in reports to your bosses or whatever business you're in? You want to make sure those reports reflect the positive side of your ego, that they're not sloppy or stupidly written. But you don't care what you say when you talk. That's just natural. So when you talk about how great you are, you'll inflate it. When you write it down, you can't inflate it unless you lie right out. That would be stupid. So you improve. Anybody who sends in energy reports that are better than what they really did is very flattering. Can you imagine Mike Warren getting letters saying they did better than Mike claimed they were supposed to do? I mean, it's just irrational. You should blame the guy who sold you the stuff in the first place. So if you're lying on the positive side, you're hurting you, not me. You're making me feel great. So don't lie on the positive side. Dick says you all are. I don't believe it. But tell it just like it is. Otherwise, we can't help you. And those who don't send reports because they're bad or something, you're defeating yourself. The only way I can help you is to see a bad report and guarantee it to go up. Because in effect, all of you energy people have a guarantee from us that you'll be winners, consistent winners, if you do as we prescribe. That's part of the contract. Although we could not spell it out in the contract, because it's not legal to say, I guarantee you'll be a winner. It's an impossible thing. Courts will just throw it out, so we couldn't say it, but it's tacit. Yes, sir.
Do we pick out pace lines in the same way for energy?
Yes, sir. You absolutely pick out pace lines exactly the same. Now, we have a very sophisticated addition to that statement in the KGEM, which you'll get, in which we suggest you put in as many horses as you want from as many different pace lines. Just we'll show you here in a minute how you denote the pace lines. Did you get the follow-up? You don't take the follow-up yet. You will. But there's a very key race in there. Let me now. Part of our method is not just pace. It's a class designation. How many of you, all of you who say you don't do this, report to Bob Cochran? How many of you do not do your APVs and your class figures? You're naughty, naughty. Anybody who's lying? They confessed. I know a lot of you are not doing it because I get too many problem races where I see no APV class figures written on the side of the form. First thing I do is tell those people, I call them, I have a number for them, and ask them. And I'm not going to help you if you won't do what the method says. APV and class work for us. I know Dr. Quirin said it isn't worth a damn, and all the other things people say, those things, but they work for us. Now, they work in perhaps a different degree at this track than they do in Chicago. It's up to you to know that. We've got a figure somewhere in one of these manuals we're going to give you that tells you that 86 to 89%, depending on which, in the top five in ties, are won by the top five in ties APVs, or classes, if the case may be. Now, that's a heck of a way to get 86% contenders right away. Anybody got a question on that?
It's a follow-up 20.
It's follow-up 20? Yeah, we had a whole thing on that. I put it out. That was the one before the last one.
Is that at Woodlands?
That's everywhere. Now, it's going to be different at Woodlands, but you have to determine it. It's going to have some effect. If it has no effect, then you'd ignore it, but you have to have it down to know what you should ignore. I don't know. I didn't do any class figures yesterday at Woodlands. I didn't do any computer figures. We did have computer figures available, and when they jived with what Jimmy and I thought, we bet them with more confidence. But we weren't going to take any computer to the track. Dick did. All you have to do is look over. What do you got there, Dick? You go bet it. I tell you to do all the work, but I don't. I'm getting so old now that I just like to look at other people's readouts, except when I'm alone. And I have to do the work myself. I do better when I do the work myself. But I can make a living on Dick's readouts, or even guys who are not as good as Dick, and he's pretty good. Dick's secret of success is his money management. I'm telling you, Dick is not, he keeps saying he's not the world's greatest handicapper, so I accept that. But this guy wins money in the hundreds every day by following a disciplined money management procedure and not ever deviating from it, no matter what he loses. He just is oblivious to anything but the strict discipline of his money management, which he'll go into, not at this session, but at the main body session. Any other questions up to this point? Remember, We are merely dissecting a race, as you would a laboratory animal, or as cannibals would any of us. We're dissecting. You got to have a lot of sense of humor, too, folks, in this. You got to be willing to laugh at anything. That's the secret of successful handicapping, is laughing at things that other people don't laugh at. You got to have the gift of laughter. Believe me, if you take this seriously, you're in trouble. Anything not worth doing at all is not worth doing well. Write that down. And society says what we're doing is not worth doing at all, so go on their premise. It has got to be fun, and it's fun to win. Ask Duke. Isn't it more fun to win than lose? Duke used to bet more when he was losing, but he bets now when he's winning, didn't you? Phenomenon, and not an unusual one. Losers plunge. They do. As long as they can afford it, they'll go on losing and plunging for the rest of their lives and love it. They're having fun. Hey, if losers can have fun, why can't we? It's got to be fun. That's the first premise you got to go on. This has got to be fun. It's got to be exciting. It's got to be that anticipation. Boy, oh boy, look, at this track, it's great. They tell you the payoff instead of the odds. So it's nice to look up and say, hey, I'm going to get $14.20 for the win, and my place is going to, I'm going to do a little thing, and I'm going to get $8.60 to place, and that's going to be a quinella of 4 times 21. It's great. So you say, and then I figure, hey, I don't want to get to go up those stairs again. I got arthritis. You ask somebody to cash your ticket for you. And then they get all the fun. You find a loser. Will you cash this for me? I'll give you fun. And he goes, he gets all the fun cashing your ticket, and you can sit down there and relax. Winning is fun, but for the loser, that's where he gets his jollies. Losing is fun. Now, you people don't get your jollies from losing. So you're going to have to win. That's all there is to it. And it's very, not easy, very simple to win. Everybody understand this now perfectly? All you got to do is make 3 races out of it and see who wins most of them. Horse that wins 2 out of the 3 races, he's a pretty good bet, isn't he? Horse wins all 3, you don't want to bet him, he's a fluke. Something wrong with that horse. Once in a while, you get a 1-1-1 who'll win in velocity, but not in energy. Energy dictates entirely different things. Sometimes being 4th in energy is better than being 1 in a given category. So it's not the different pace line, it's a different interpretation of the readout from that pace line that makes the difference. How many of you have any problem as to the definition of our terms? You mean you all know those terms? I sometimes get, what's EMUV, what's SMUV, what's UXR, what's EXDC, what's various, what's variegate? You all know that. What's paragon?
We don't know what any of that.
Oh, somebody finally. Somebody finally.
We need Dick Sell. Put
him on. Well, I'm going to put him on for energy. He'll tell you the velocity. Anybody not understand the velocity terms? Factor W, factor X. More important, how many of you understand what they mean but don't understand what they mean? I mean, you know, you can define what it is, first plus third, but you don't know how to interpret it. Okay, Dick will help you there. I'll take you through energy. The reason we use different terminology from the rest is because of me. A psychologist does not deal with numbers or, hey, we gave you the information. If you can't figure it out, don't blame me. It's your fault. We feel responsible, absolutely responsible, that you must win. Whereas the guys who sell you systems and methods and stuff, they don't feel responsible. They're smarter than I am. They're going to live a lot longer. I'm only 29, but look at me. Therefore, and Huey Moll said it, and I kind of liked it when he said it in 1975, that the future of successful handicapping would have to have a new language. That the current Hossie language of handicapping was inadequate to explain the technicalities that would make a person a winner in 19... He projected only to 1980. So I like that. And let's face it, if you know what a variance is and what a variegate is and what factor W is, it gives you a kind of an elitist standing. Used to, most people have stolen our terminology now to become part of the lexicon of handicap. That's to be expected.
There aren't any more systems now. They're all methods.
Yeah.
That was the first thing.
That's right. But see, we give you an elitist status by giving you non-HASI terms, because those are the terms that users apply. He ran at 110 and change. How much change? Yeah, it's a couple of ticks off. What the hell's a tick? It's something my dog's getting. I got to take him off. Boom. That's a stupid language. So we came up with a language that is yours alone until everybody started stealing it, and which gives you an elitist standard. Now, when you feel elitist, you ever notice what that term noblesse oblige, which means the obligation of the noble in French? We're using the French terms, of course, in English compositions now passé. It got me through dumbbell English. Now, you'll come to you later. That's what all dying comics say. It'll come to you later. You'll learn to appreciate it. Okay. Noblesse oblige is that you have to live up to what's expected of you, to what you've committed yourself to do. You cannot do as the HASI set does and lose and lose and lose and say, yeah, but I had that horse, or yeah, but he got stiffed, or he got run off the track, or this or that happened. You had him. You ever hear a horse player didn't have the horse after the race? I had that horse. I was in Betty Wolf's. He's right down. I've been written down right here. See, I had that horse. And they go away. I had every race today except the damn jockeys and trainers and the rail and somebody put a rock in the road or something. They've all got them. I've been in races. I've heard more guys yell, I had that horse. And, of course, they didn't get him. But we have to have the horse. And as such, we've imposed upon ourselves the obligation of winning, or at least making a heck of a stab at it, and knowing what we're doing when we lose. If you know what you're doing when you lose, it's not so bad, because you can correct that mistake the next time. So we'll go through energy, and then Dick will take you through velocity. We start off with very common phrases like energy generator. But we all know what that means. It generates the energy yield by our various definitions. Okay, we got, let's see, what have we got? Early, except it doesn't mean the same with us as it means with somebody else. Now we put ESP in there. Some people are using these terms. I have a dear friend who lives in San Fernando Valley, who's using ESP. Not really, but he's using it as nomenclature. ESP merely, I've studied under Dr. Ryan at Duke, and because I'm supposed to have some. Extrasensic perception. We know that a race runs early, or it runs sustains, or it runs pressure. Let me make secondary delineations. We have early pressers who are not necessarily on the lead, but are pressing to lead. We have sustained pressers, horses who are pressing and are not late, but they're pressing a little bit behind the presser. Then we have sustained itself. And we have presser, of course, itself. But they didn't have pressers. Brohammer was doing, what do you call them,